and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluel, and today we're going to be analyzing a question that's been out there for many months, even before the offseason began. And that is, where will Bryce Harper and Manny Machado end up landing? And more specifically, do the Chicago White Sox have a legitimate opportunity to land one or both of those superstars? Look, it's a loaded question, which is why today we're fortunate enough to have a very special guest joining us momentarily. He covers the White Sox on an in-depth basis. He's an insider. He's around the team 24/7. So we'll talk to him about his thoughts and his opinions on whether the White Sox are going to make a big splash in this offseason. We'll also talk with him about the Chicago Bulls. Week 2 of the Jim Boylan era has officially concluded, and right now this team does not look any better than it did before. We'll talk about why that is while analyzing the real reason why this team is not as productive as it once was. Lots of Chicago sports news to get to. I'm so glad that you're here joining us on today's show. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally. On Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Moochie World. Creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Come celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season this summer in Crestwood. Call 708-489-2255 to secure your spot amongst history this summer. Well, I'm really excited to bring you today's special guest knowing this. In the Chicago market today, which teams are considered the most intriguing? Obviously, at number one is the Chicago Bears, simply because they're going to the playoffs for the first time in 8 years. But at number two, there's a frenzy. It's not the Hawks, who are sputtering after the firing of Joel Quenneville. It's certainly not the Bulls, whose team right now is in complete dysfunction. And it's not the Cubs either, because right now the Cubs have done nothing in regards to making moves this offseason. Well, thinking about it that way then, the Sox are the number two most intriguing team in Chicago. And for all the right reasons. Right now, they have lots of money to spend, which they plan on spending on either Harper or Machado or both. And at the same time, they've got a plethora of young prospects ready to make an impact at the major league level. If you're a Sox fan right now, you should be happy and overjoyed knowing that your team is just about ready to get over that hump and make a play at not only a division title, mind you, but the World Series. It's very possible, knowing what this team has in its back pocket, knowing the money it has to spend, and knowing how willing they are to make sure this rebuild runs its course. It's definitely an exciting time, which is why I wanted to make sure to get a White Sox-related guest on the show today. We've got a great interview planned today as we talk about the White Sox and their odds for Harper and Machado, the rebuild effort overall and its progress, plus some thoughts on the Chicago Bulls and their struggles as of late. At this time, I'd like to thank you for continuing to support this podcast and the website, and I hope you enjoy what's to come. It's now time for our special guest. He began his sports media career as an anchor and reporter for WPBN-TV in Traverse City. Following his tenure in Michigan, he covered sports in both Detroit and New York City before becoming one of the original anchors for ESPN News. After 2 years at ESPN, he landed a lead reporter job at Fox Sportsnet in Denver. Today, he's the host of White Sox pregame and postgame coverage, plus the White Sox Talk podcast, all for NBC Sports Chicago. Please welcome the 6-time Emmy winner, Chuck Garfine, to the show. Chuck, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
It's great to be on the show. Wow, my whole career just flashed before my eyes with that introduction. Thank you.
To start today, Chuck, let's address the elephant in the room involving the White Sox and their pursuit of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Now, they've sent some mixed signals because they are interested in Harper, but at the same time, they've recently acquired Yonder Alonso, Machado's brother-in-law, not to mention the fact that they had Machado in on some touring around Guaranteed Rate Field. What are you expecting the White Sox to do in this situation?
It looks like they're trying to do everything they can to sign one of them, at least. I don't think they'd have room for both of them, but you know, you got to pursue both. I mean, they both fit what the White Sox are trying to do long term. The fact that they're 26 and the prime is of their careers, and I know Rick Hahn would hate me to say this, but they check all the boxes for the White Sox. So it makes sense for them to, you know, you got to pursue both and see if you can sign one of them. And it's a big poker game going on between the players, the agents, the teams. So we'll see what happens. It looks to me like the White Sox are doing everything in their power to try to sign one of them. You can only do so much, and there's some big competitors that they have to deal with, meaning, you know, the Yankees, the Phillies, possibly the Dodgers for Bryce Harper. So despite, you know, you could put forth the most money. We're assuming whoever offers the most money is going to get them, but you never know. We're all just kind of speculating, and that's what this whole game is right now, a game of speculation. So I think you, me, and everyone listening has to kind of sit back and try to be patient in this situation. I know it's tough because there's so much at stake. These are two franchise players, franchise-altering players, and if the White Sox are able to get one of them, I mean, my goodness, it'll be a major, major, like, cosmic shift here in Chicago and in the American League Central, that's for sure.
I know you mentioned one of them or one or the other, but do you actually see it being a possibility for the Sox to sign both Harper and Machado? Is that a legitimate possibility, or is that something that's going to be very difficult knowing the other contenders that are in play for both guys?
I mean, it's extremely difficult because you're basically putting, you know, I don't know what they're, again, everyone is speculating what they're both going to get. And who knows what's really going on behind the scenes. I'm assuming it's going to be a $30 million a year player for both. Would the Sox spend $60 million plus on two players? I don't think so. But I guess my point is, I don't want to assume anything. I just don't want to assume anything. So it sounds crazy to do that, but who knows? I'm guessing that they're not going to try to sign both, but you never know. But so don't put me on it. I'm thinking they're trying to get one of these guys, and if they do get one of them, that would be incredible.
So let's say the Sox end up signing either player. Now, in any case, they're still a year or two away from contention. So what will a signing like this do to that initial timeline? I mean, could we be seeing the Sox making the playoffs or at least contending for a playoff spot next season with Harper and or Machado in their lineup?
Yeah, I think we let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's step by step by step. And if the White Sox are able to sign one of these guys, then great, then we can have that conversation. And I don't think that on the surface getting one of these guys is going to make them contenders. They just because they're just so young. That being said, baseball is a funny game and players develop at different stages. So, you know, if Moncada ends up having a big year and Lopez and Giolito and all these guys, Tim Anderson, all take steps forward collectively, you couple that with, you know, the Indians potentially taking a step back, then yeah, maybe they can contend. But, you know, I know all of us want to jump into that conversation about, oh, can they contend in 2019 if this happens and if this happens? You know, I'm just focused on can they potentially get one of these guys. That would be great. And then if they do, then we can have that next conversation of what could the White Sox do in 2019.
And, you know, with you being a White Sox reporter, being so close to the team, what are you hearing about the team's financial state? Because in the past, this is an organization that historically does not like to spend too much money. But this year, that's obviously changed. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, they have spent a lot of money in the past. You might remember it was 2011, I think. They signed Adam Dunn. They brought back, I think it was Canerco and AJ, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, Kenny Williams famously said, "We're all in." And they spent a lot of money, and the payroll was high. And then there was the year, like, I think, winter of 2013 or 14, where they, you know, signed Melky Cabrera and David Robertson. They traded for Jeff Samardzija and I'm forgetting someone there, and they were really active that offseason as well. Now, there's a difference between doing that and then, you know, signing a player for $300 million. But, you know, the White Sox kind of pick and choose their moments as to when they're going to be aggressive and when they want to dial it back. And, you know, they dialed it back for a few years, and by doing that, gave them the opportunity to, you know, flex their financial might And that's what they're doing now. I mean, how many teams are, you know, in the conversation for Machado and Harper? Very few, because it's a whole lot of money, and the White Sox have been planning for this for years, ever since, you know, 2 years ago when they embarked on this rebuild. This was their first big window of opportunity to spend, because they saw that these two prime free agents were going to potentially be available. You didn't know for certain. They could have always, you know, re-upped with their teams and not gone to free agency, but the hope was that they'd be available, and here they are, and they're trying to take advantage of the moment.
Chuck Garfine here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Chuck, I want to shift to the Bulls and now the end of the second week in the Jim Boylan era. Now, according to many reports, it hasn't been a smooth transition. Players seem to have already lost confidence in the team itself. What are your thoughts on Fred Hoiberg's firing and how Boylan has handled the team so far, stepping in and becoming the permanent head coach?
You know, it's been messy. You know, I would be lying if I said it was smooth sailing. There are some growing pains there. He's trying to, you know, step into a role and be the kind of head coach that he wants to be. And he's, you know, trying to shake things up with his team that is proving to be a problem so far. It's a young team. They're rebuilding. Everyone's trying to kind of find their roles. And there are some growing pains there, no doubt. It stinks that not everyone, you know, it stinks that they've had these injuries, and LaVine and Markkanen and Dunn can't play together, and that's a big part of your future. That being said, more losses, more chances to get a number one or number two pick next year. So that's just kind of where things are at right now with the Bulls. You want to see some growth with their players. And, you know, Boylan, you know, this is his first head coaching job in the NBA, and he's, you know, trying to leave an impact with these guys and affect them positively. And as we sit here right now, it's been messy, but, you know, sometimes that happens. And so let's kind of see if these guys can find their footing over the next few weeks and get this thing going in a positive direction. Right now, it's just, as I said, I think messy is the best way to describe the last few weeks with the Bulls.
And it's interesting, you know, you mentioned the injuries to Portis and Markkanen and without Dunn. And Fred Hoiberg had to kind of right that ship in a way during the beginning of the season. Now, I'm not saying that Hoiberg was necessarily the best coach for the job, but do you feel that his firing was unfair, knowing what he had to go through?
You know, I think there's more to the story than just, you know, he didn't have players. You can definitely make the argument that, yes, it did not help him that he did not have his full complement of players to do what he did. But I think there's more to the story than just that. I would kind of lean on the guys who cover the team consistently. I'm not covering it right now, or, you know, I haven't been on the beat in a couple seasons, but I'll just leave it at there's more to the story than just that.
And now under Jim Boylan, the Bulls are ready to trade Jabari Parker less than a year after the $40 million contract and the two-year deal. Why is Parker getting moved so quickly, and what have been your thoughts on his performance so far this year?
You know, I think he kind of got caught up in this coaching change and, you know, in a more up-tempo, run-and-gun kind of offense that Hoiberg is running. I think Parker fit that. From where I sit, it looks like Boylan wants to have a more defensive mindset. And at last check, Jabari Parker's defense has not exactly been, you know, all-star caliber. And I think that's where a problem comes for Parker with Boylan running the show, and why it might make sense to trade him and see what you can get for him.
Now, I want to ask you from a personal standpoint, after witnessing what has gone on with this team for the past couple of weeks, what's in store for this Bulls franchise? What do you expect to come out of all of this dysfunction in the future?
A real good player next season in the draft. That's how I look at it. You know, it's tough to predict how it's all going to go, but what I will say is, you know, in the NBA, if there is a sport where one player can make a massive impact on a team and a franchise, it's basketball. You know, in baseball, you could, you know, have the best player in the game. You get the best player in the last 30 years. But when the game is on the line, if the order does not work in your team's favor, that player may not be able to come to the plate in the bottom of the ninth when the game's on the line. In basketball, can give the ball always to your best player, and he can affect change. And so and there's only, 10 players on the court. So, they need some luck. They need some fortune. It's been a lot of misfortune lately. And, when they got Derrick Rose, it was pure luck that they were able to draft him. They've been able to get some pieces together, and I think, in time, if they get some real fortune in the NBA draft, I like Wendell Carter Jr., but, you get a number one, number two player who can really change things, the course of your franchise. I think that, if you throw all that together, you can really quickly turn it around. That's the optimist in me, and I'm hoping that happens with the Bulls in the near future.
Moving to your personal career, I know that you grew up right here in the Chicago area and even started hosting your own radio show in high school. Take me through your stops along the way and how you ended up being such a well-known figure here in Chicago sports media.
Oh, that's a tough one right there. Okay, so I did start out in high school when I was like yourself. I mean, you started really early. You were 13 when you started this venture. You started doing podcasts, right? 13?
Correct.
So when I was 14, as a freshman in high school, I went to Holman Fossmer High School, and they have a high school radio station. And I started DJing, and I would do little sports casts from time to time, and I would announce play-by-play for, like, the JV basketball team and football team. And then, as time went on, I did more things at the high school. I became the station manager my senior year, so I was really got a lot of experience in high school. And then after college, I got my first job in Traverse City, Michigan. You mentioned that was the NBC affiliate in Traverse City. I was there for a year and a half. There were a lot of stops along the way. ESPN, I was there for the start of ESPN News when I was 25. I got a great break to do that, and that was a huge adjustment for me because I had gone from doing 3.5 minute sportscasts a night in Traverse City to host solo anchoring a 3-hour show 5 days a week. And that was a big challenge, but a great experience for me to learn how all the ins and outs of anchoring and getting through, you name it, from, technical problems to, announcing highlights blindly on the air live, you name it. And that was just an incredible experience for me. From there, I was in markets like Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Detroit, Michigan, and New York, and Denver. And then in 2004, I got this break to come to Chicago and start at Comcast Sportsnet. And the first year we were on the air, I was covering the White Sox, and they won the World Series. So it was great, great timing and quite a joyride that I got to be on in our first year here, and I've been covering the White Sox ever since. And that's a basic, 3-minute answer about my career. We can go a little bit more in depth if you'd like, if you have any questions, but that's basically the cliff notes of what I've done in the last, believe it or not, if I count high school, boy, I've been doing it for, I'm not going to go there. That's way too long. Oh my goodness. Over 30 years. Over 30 years I've been doing this. That's crazy.
Does it feel like it's been 30 years to you?
No, it's like 30 weeks, 30 days. Like, it just started. I feel like I was back in Holman Fossmer announcing Holman Fossmer Viking basketball for the first time. It feels like that was last week. It's crazy.
How fulfilling is it for you? I know you mentioned your time with the White Sox and how you've been a fan since you grew up in this area. How fulfilling has it been for you then to cover them so in depth as well over this past decade?
Yeah, if you would have told the 10-year-old version of myself that I would be for a job covering the Chicago White Sox, I would not believe you. It is a dream come true. I remember for at least the first 6 or 7 years, I would like kind of pinch myself that I was actually able to do this for a living. I just grew up a humongous Chicago sports fan, loved the White Sox. I did not hate the Cubs, I'll just be honest with you. I did like to watch the Cubs and go to Wrigley Field. I still like going to Wrigley Field. But I was a White Sox fan. And so it's been incredible. And, I've got – what helps is, even though I worked in all these other markets, I didn't have the history, that of those towns. I mean, I could – you can learn it and learn it, but I didn't live it. I lived being a Chicago sports fan, and so – You know, I have conversations with Rick Hahn a lot because Rick was a lot like me. We're about the same age, and he was a diehard Chicago sports fan and just obsessed with it. And so we kind of share a lot of the same memories of growing up here in Chicago and living and dying with the teams. And so it's a special city, and I'm so lucky and fortunate that I get to do this for a living.
How do you think that starting out being a fan, how do you think that's helped you become better at your job?
Because I was a fan?
Correct. You grew up as a fan of the White Sox, and now you've been covering them for such a while. Do you think that's made you better at what you do and maybe more passionate at what you do?
Well, I mean, I've always had the passion, and I've always, you know, had the work ethic, but I think the difference is I have the history, you know, and I know the White Sox fan because I, you know, grew up one, and I know what, you know, every twist and turn that this franchise takes. You know, I have the history, and I know, you know, I can kind of guess what White Sox fans are thinking and feeling because I, you know, because I have that shared memory of the last 40 some odd years. So, and then, you know, when you've got these legends, I know what Harold Baines means to White Sox fans. And when he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, I get it. You know, I know what White Sox fans are feeling because I'm feeling it. And I think that helps. You know, if I was in another market and someone got in the Hall of Fame, I'd be like, that's great. I look at the numbers. I remember growing up and kind of seeing him play. But then there's, you know, I wasn't just watching Harold Baines play. I was cheering him on, and I, you know, felt those emotions. And so it's just different, you know, covering the teams that you grew up. A lot of it's just instinct. It's in my DNA. So it's more, I don't want to say it's effortless because there's a lot of work that goes into, that's involved with what we do. The key is to make it look easy. People think what we do is easy. The reason why it looks easy is because we make it look easy. Some parts end up being natural and easy, but the work that, like when you see me on the air or when you hear my podcast, I didn't just show up. There's a lot of work and a lot of research that goes on before then. So I'm like obsessed with being prepared. So I'm ultra prepared, or at least try to be. I do not feel comfortable when I'm not prepared to do something. And so, you know, that's really a big, always been a big focus of mine is working hard and making sure I'm as ready as possible for anything.
And Chuck, before we let you go here today, you've covered sports in many different markets as we've gone over and have had experiences along the way. What's been your favorite moment or a crowning moment that you've been a part of as a sports journalist?
Okay, I'll tell you two things. The first one was when I was 17 years old. This is incredible to think about this actually happened. I got an internship, if you want to call it. Not even an internship. I got a job part-time to get post-game sound at a Bulls game. And I think I did it once or twice, and I got paid like $20. And it was a Bulls game when Michael Jordan was there. And the Bulls had lost a game, and he normally was very good with the media, but he stormed out of the locker room and didn't talk to anybody, didn't want to talk to anybody in the media. But I followed him. It was like my goal at the time in life was to interview Michael Jordan. So we're walking across the court at the old Chicago Stadium. He's going to his car. This is after the game. And I'm there with my little, you know, tape recorder, and I'm following him, and I'm interviewing him, and he's being very polite and answering my questions while he's walking away, and even though he didn't want to talk to anybody at the time, he did answer my questions. They were short. The reason why he was so upset, by the way, it's a longer story, but basically the Bulls had played the Cleveland Cavaliers, I think, five or six times that season. They lost all five or six games. This was the last game of the regular season. And they lost that one, and the Cavs rested half their players, and the Bulls still lost. And they were playing the Cavs in the first round of the playoffs the next week. And to show you the greatness of Michael Jordan, the Bulls ended up, despite losing all six of those games in the regular season, they ended up winning that series, and that series was won when Jordan hit that shot over Craig Elo. It just shows you just how incredible that he was. But anyway, you know, this was just me being able to interview Michael Jordan when I was 17 years old. It was a terrible interview, but the experience will stay with me forever. And then on top of that, the second one is being able to cover the White Sox when they won the World Series. And I was in Houston when they swept them, and it still feels like a dream to me. Because I was working, I couldn't enjoy it like a fan. I never did, just because I was just so focused on the job. So I had to kind of detach myself. It was exciting. It was incredible. But that seems like a dream for sure, that actually happened even, 13 years later.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for being here on the show today. Such a pleasure to have you on, and hope to have you on again down the road.
Hey, anytime. I appreciate it. It's an honor that you called me and to be on your show. And good luck in your career. You're off to a fantastic start. I'm very impressed with how you've begun your career, and great things are ahead for you.
Thank you. Well, there you have it. What an honor it was to have Chuck Garfine on today's show as we talked with him about the White Sox and their chances of getting Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, the Chicago Bulls and their overall dysfunction, plus some great stories from his career in sports media. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally. On Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Sags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Thank you again to our special guest today, Chuck Garfine, for coming on the show. The interview itself was informative, but at the same time, very enjoyable and very fun. So happy that Chuck took the time to come on the show. Now, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. Also, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to listen to my new radio show every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHBK-FM Chicago. Every Monday morning, I bring to you my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions while, of course, having very special guests on the show. And what makes it even better is that now I can take phone calls on the radio. You can call in anytime at 773-702-8424. Again, that's 773-702-8424, and we can debate sports on the air. Make sure to take advantage of that, and most importantly, make sure to tune in every Monday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.